Hello, and welcome to the Grappling with Fatherhood podcast, a place where we have a real conversation about parenting and jiu-jitsu and the places where they sometimes collide and overlap. My name is Blake Kosmeyer. I am a jiu-jitsu black belt and the father of two kids. My co-host, as always, is Uday Malhotra.
Buddy, it's Uday Malhotra here, jiu-jitsu black belt and father of two beautiful little girls.
Uday, how you doing today, buddy?
Good question. I hate being that guy where like I'm putting the weight that's on my shoulders on other people, but I'm dealing with a little bit right now, you know, and I think it's apropos for what our topic of conversation is today. I got a rejection from a company that I had spent months interviewing with and I had gotten really excited about. And, it's partly on me for giving myself that false hope a little earlier, than I probably should have. And, you know, I'm trying to do my best to regulate my mood, so that it doesn't impact the people around me. And I'm not doing very well at that, you know, like, particularly I don't want to put it on my kids and my wife, you know, and even the people I train with, you know, they see me kind of looking down after training the last couple of days. And, one of my students, one of my friends came up to me and was like, I hate seeing you upset. And I was like, fuck, this is real. And I also don't want people to see me going through what I'm going through. You know what I mean? Like I should be able to put on a face at least, you know? And so,
As someone who's seen you go through this, I would say you manage it with grace. I would say it's really hard to approach these situations and be hopeful without also having expectations. Without also seeing yourself in the position, you know, like the interview process you're going through, it's not like you're going to get a job at a restaurant where you talk to the hiring manager, fill out the application, maybe talk to one other manager and you get a job. Like these are lengthy, you know, by the time you get to that final interview, you have put in like tens of hours of work into this thing. It's not a easy interview process, right?
It's not a quick shot. And to your point, you know, in that process, I do things like picture myself there. And in the process of interviewing, it actually helps me because it motivates me to put my best foot forward. And that's why I think it hurts so much to get that rejection, you know, and you know, something will come up. It stings. And I hate that the people around me, see, man. It, you know, and I try and do a better job of,
I think that sometimes for the people around you, it is just as valuable to see you be vulnerable as it is to see you be strong. And like you do the same thing, bro. Like, you're hurting, but you're showing up, you know? And like, that's fucking hard. And like, that's something that is that's setting a really great example. And also not just putting on a happy face. I mean, putting on a happy face when you're ready to be happy, I think is what's appropriate, and not putting on a fake face just because you think that that's what people expect from you. It doesn't feel good to be the sad guy. You know, as someone who's I remember going and training jiu-jitsu after my mom passed away and everybody on the mats knew. And I was like, man, I just don't want everybody to be tiptoeing around me, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, at the end of the day, that was such a better place for me to be in. Those concerns really did wear off pretty quickly because that is the place where I go to sort of forget that stuff. And I mean, with the job, it's a lot harder. Of course, when I lost my mom, I also lost my job. So I was it was all of it at the same time. And so,
yeah, and that's the other thing. That's the other thing. I feel silly feeling like shit when people are going through real stuff, you know, like people like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel silly for being so bummed.
You shouldn't. I mean,
people are losing love.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there, one, if that helps you process it, but like, you should not feel like your emotions are not valid because they're not, because what you're experiencing, because there are people who are experiencing worse things than you are. If it is a pissing contest, man, somebody's always going to be suffering more than you are, you know, like and I think you're, you know, there's a lot going on, man. You got a family, you got kids, like, you know, that's, we'll get into this a little bit later on in the episode, but anyways, man, thank you for being so honest and open about that. And I just think that it's as uncomfortable as it is, I think it's important that people see your vulnerability, man, and just see like, when it fucking sucks, it sucks. And you know, it's not always easy to just smile and pretend that you're happy. It's my favorite thing that you used to say to me. You still say it all the time, but when I cop out and give me like, how you doing, Blake? And I say, living the dream. And you're like, I know if you're saying you're living the dream, but you're, that dude is really going through it.
It's not a good thing.
That's man.
Right. Yeah. How about you, man? How are you doing?
Okay. It's a lot of stuff going on, you know, experiencing the saying, you know, the reward for good work is more work. That's kind of where I'm at right now. We got a house full of sick kids. Just another rotation of whatever the thing is that's happening at preschool that just, you know, comes through the house, and it's okay. It's just, annoying because you feel like, especially
you haven't gotten anything
well,
yet.
No, I've gotten
you.
Yeah, that's true. But you know, right now I've got a little stomach bug, which is kind of started getting me. Last night I had like chills and a fever. And then I woke up this morning with like a stomach bug, and then again, I'm trying to power through this and make sure everything make it not what it is, and you can't really just will yourself out of being sick, unfortunately. I've caught it this last piece, but you're right, I have been pretty good about getting it, and it's hard because I feel like with jiu-jitsu I've been scrambling to get in. I'm getting my minimum in, right? More than my minimum. I'm getting four to five days a week, usually more like four, and I just feel like I'm scrambling though. Like, I don't feel like I'm focused. I feel like I'm just showing up. Even like last week I trained 4 days in a row, and by my last day, I was just not good. Like, no other way to say it.
I'm going to tell you some advice. It's a wise man once told me 5 minutes ago, you're showing up, dude. You're showing up. You know what I mean? Like, look, it's always great to do things with intention, but at least you're doing the thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're showing up and you're doing your best to keep your sword sharp. And I'll actually argue that I think you felt great last few times. You felt really good, man.
Yeah. I think in general, we've had really good training. The two of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're solving good problems. And if I think about like, if I do an analysis post, you know, training, and I think about, you know, who tapped me, what positions I gave up, all that stuff. It nets out to, I am exactly where I was, you know, I'm like not slipping, or I'm even getting better, at some things, but just mentally it's, you know, you can get in your head about this stuff, I think, a lot, but thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. But it was like Sunday was a classic case. Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say, think about it this way. If you're training 5 days a week, like you said, right? Five or four, four or five days,
and then
a week.
Like
that's two and a half.
Some days I get an extra session in. Some weeks I get an extra session in.
Dude, that's two to two and a half hours a week of just sparring.
Yeah,
right. Because I imagine you're at least training, like sparring, rolling for 30 minutes each of those times, right? So that's 2 to 2.5 hours of just rolling every week. That doesn't even include the technique part, right? You do something for 2.5 hours every week for the whole year, right? You're going I mean, I'll pull up my spreadsheet for you right now, dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you, the rewards will come, you know what I mean? So I think you're okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I was going to say, like, Sunday was like a classic example of like, okay, got up, got Duncan with the kids, had a friend, a mutual friend of ours who like needed a check-in. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, to, you know, he wanted to go for a bike ride. I was like, okay, cool. We'll go on a bike ride. We've been trying to have this check-in for a while, but also like that bike ride meant that like, I didn't go to master's training in the morning. It meant that I wasn't going to go to open mat because I wasn't going to take another 2 hours away from the kids, which meant that like, I had to get, and then like I pinged a friend. I was like, hey man, can you come over at like 2 for like a quick session in the garage? And by that point, like I was like, I'd already ridden my bike for 2 hours and like played with the kids and trained for 3 days in a row. And it was just like, I was so not in it, but I was like,
why didn't you just train with the guy?
Why didn't you just train with this guy? That's a much better idea, actually. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you should be like, hey, I'll go for a bike ride with you, but you're going to bring your ass to my garage and we're going to, yeah, dude.
yeah. Anyways, everything ended up getting done, just not in the order or with the attention or that I had wanted, you know? And that's kind of how life feels right now, where it's like, fuck man, hands are full.
Yeah.
It's all getting done kind of. And like some of the things that I want to be better at, I'm not better at, but like, there's just so much going on that you just got to get through it. So anyways, I'm doing in the grand scheme of things, these are all good problems to have, man. Like the reason why I'm busy is because good things are happening, right? Like, and so, yeah.
That's great, man.
I think this week we're introducing a new section. And sorry to like...
We are indeed, sir.
Before we get into... First of all, this week's episode, y'all, is about anxiety. We're going to have a serious conversation about anxiety, which is relevant. I actually had another really good check-in with another friend who is independent of this. And I think we'll have some good things to talk about there. But first, nice. Uday, our new section is what grinds your gears. What's grinding your gears?
Thank you, Peter Griffin. Thank you, Peter Griffin, for adding this to our section. Man, I've got two things today. Great. So I love rolling and sparring with judo black belts. Uh-huh. It's a lot of fun. They'll throw me. Sometimes I'll look for my takedowns, right? We get to the mat, we scrap. What I don't like is when a judo black belt, who's a blue belt in jiu-jitsu or a purple belt or a brown belt or even a white belt, wears their judo black belt to jiu-jitsu class. And this has very little to do with like the ego of it all, right? Like, oh no, you shouldn't wear that here. This is a different class, right? There is that element of it as well. But it has more to do with the idea of if you wear a black belt in a jiu-jitsu class, I'm going to roll with you like you're a black belt. And I have seen this more often than not.
Wow, really?
And it just grinds my gears. Yeah, it's like, and then I feel bad because I just, you know, I murked some blue belt who's like wearing a black belt. And I don't think I've seen any other martial art do that, right? Like I've never seen a Taekwondo black belt come in wearing his black belt or her black belt to jiu-jitsu class. And even a wrestler, right, will be like, yeah, I have some wrestling experience, right? Like I say that all the time. Yeah, I have some wrestling experience. But if you wear a black belt in a class, there are certain expectations, and we've talked about those expectations before, I think, right? Like of what that should look like. And I'm going to roll with the assumption that those expectations are in place.
A little bit of stolen valor, if you will.
A little bit, you know what I mean? Yeah. A little bit. Also, so Van and I were actually talking about this right before this, and her point is that you're cheating yourself of that journey of getting promoted. Uh-huh. You are cheating yourself of that journey if you wear that black belt. And so I just – it irks me when I see it. And sometimes I don't even – like I said, the first few times it happened, I didn't even know. And so I just rolled like they were black belts. And then there's one person who I actually told – I was like, listen, man, he's a teenager and he's a black belt in judo. And he's a white belt in jiu-jitsu. He may be blue belt now. And I told him, don't wear that to this class. Don't wear. After I rolled with him, I was like, who gave you your black belt? He goes, oh, this is my judo black belt. Don't wear that to this class. Don't do it, dude. You're asking for really a rough time when you roll, right? And so that's what grinds my gears. One of the things.
What's
today.
The other?
All right, number two. Coming in to jiu-jitsu with a wrestling background, you know, I had a really strong grappling background coming in, right? So since I was a white belt, Blake, I've heard a lot of, oh, wow, yeah, you use that wrestling to beat me. And so as a white belt, I heard this from purple belts. I heard this as a white belt from blue belts. And like, you know, I'm not trying to ruffle my own feathers or anything, but like if I was doing nogi against a purple belt as a white belt, I would at least hang.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like they'd compliment my wrestling, which is cool. But what I don't like is when people compliment my wrestling when I'm doing jiu-jitsu stuff. You know, it really irks me. Let me tell you what someone said to me the other day. This is like the pinnacle of it, dude. So you and I have talked about this. I've been actually working on developing my guard a lot lately, right? Like I feel really good when I'm on top, and I feel really good pulling guard now, right? Like I feel like I've developed a really decent guard. Still has something to work on both ends, but as a result, I pull guard and I look for my submissions from there. And what someone said to me the other day after I submitted them for my guard was, wow, you really got that wrestler guard. What the fuck does that even mean? What the fuck does that even mean? If I pull guard in wrestling, the game is over. The match is over. There is no match. It's done. I'm pinned. It's over, dude. There's no such thing as a wrestler guard. So it happened like a month ago.
You're still
and
thinking
like every
about
now
it.
And then I'll just think back to that. I'll just think back to that. Who says that? Like, I honestly don't even remember who said it to me, but it was like, what does that even mean? So that's what grinds my gears this week. And I'm glad, I appreciate you letting me have an outlet for getting this off my chest. All right.
That's funny, man.
Anything grinding
you know,
gears?
This isn't grinding my gears, but it's grinding Becca's gears a little bit. And I'll go the other way around. I'll go regarding parenting. Yeah. So, you know, our preschool is a co-op, which means that, you know, we volunteer, et cetera, one day a week. And about that, three days a month, really. And then there are these shifts that we have that are called e-parents, where you get there early so that everybody else can watch the kids while the other parents are like setting up the day or whatever. Well, the preschool teacher setting up the day because they have their kids there and, you know, just kind of looking after each other. And then if somebody doesn't show up that day, if another parent who's supposed to be watching, that's your shift. And then you pick it up because they didn't show up. Right. So you go there with the expectation but nobody ever does that. Nobody ever stiffs anybody. Right. Like just doesn't show up ghosts. Right. And doesn't, you know, usually if somebody's sick the morning of, we have this, like, you know, this basically Slack channel where everybody kind of talks. Anyways, Tuesday I was the e-parent. Okay. We had a lot going on at home. I had a 9:30 a.m. meeting at work. And I was like, cool. Like drop off is at like 9. So even if with my e-parent responsibilities, like I should be able to make it home by 9:30, always do, no problem. And the working parent that day didn't show up until 9:40.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
And they had sent a message to the group being like, hey, we're running a little late. It's like, okay. And the thing is, they're chronically late. Like, they're late for everything. And they're really nice people, really sweet people. And like, but they're always late. And like, for like every shift, for everything. And Becca's like, she's just like, I just don't fucking get it, man. Like, look here.
That grinds my gears for you.
Yeah.
That grinds my gears for you guys.
Yeah. I happened to get lucky on this day. And it was a day when my employer was experiencing a massive outage of their product, which impacted our ability to work. And so all of our systems were offline. Two things just dodged the happened bullet. To fucking. And so when I got online, I was like, "Hey, sorry, I'm late." And people are like, "What are you talking about? We just got here." And I was like, "What are you talking about? I just got here." But like, yeah. Oh, but this, God. I mean, this, I didn't bug me so much. I was like, "Cool, whatever." And Becca was just like, you know. And here's the thing, I can be late sometimes. I try not to be, and I think being late is a really inconsiderate thing. I think being chronically late over and over and over again is just really inconsiderate, and especially when you've got kids in the mix, because their timelines are just so, like, if you're a parent and you've got kids and you know that you're going to head somewhere late, right? Like, you're like, "Oh crap, it's took us," you just let everybody know, "Hey," and people will understand. "Oh, you've got kids. We had kids. We get it." But man, just the showing up 40 minutes, you know what I mean?
That's outrageous.
It was crazy.
And like you said, look, all of you are parents. You've all been late because of your kids at some point or another. And you don't let it happen every single time.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so I mean, I'm trying to be empathetic to their situation.
Well, no, if they would have come through with a good reason, if they would, they just showed up smiling, and I was like, "Who died?"
They didn't even apologize.
They're very kind. They're very sweet people. Okay. But Becca's like, it's one of those things where it's like, how nice are you? Like, you're nice here, but this behavior is really inconsiderate. But anyways, okay, so we ground some gears.
Yes, we did. Oh, that felt good to get off your chest, didn't it? Didn't that feel good to get off your chest?
A little bit.
Give me the parents' name. Say it right now.
No,
say
it. So sweet.
America, so sweet. Listen up. Say the names, Mike.
Oh man. Oh, anyways, moving on to the topic of the day. What causes you anxiety? So today we're talking a little bit about anxiety, anxiety in jiu-jitsu, anxiety in parenting, and just in general being an adult. And then sometimes where those things may seep into the other categories and may seep into your life. So first, we're going to talk a little bit about what causes you anxiety in jiu-jitsu. Uday, how do you feel about this?
You know, I'll be honest, you know, I've been competing between wrestling and jiu-jitsu for decades now, right? And I'll say, as a black belt and someone with 30 years of grappling experience, I still get anxiety every time I step onto the competition mats. I still get it, right? It's, am I going to do my best in front of my family and friends? Am I going to put on a good example for my students who look up to me, my kids who look up to me? You know, am I going to make myself proud of my performance? Is anyone going to get injured right now? Right? Like, these are all the things that go through my mind from the moment I consider the competition till the moment I shake the person's hand after the match ends, you know? And so, and I will also say, given the amount of experience I have competing, I have been able to kind of modulate that feeling a little bit better over time, right? I've been able to kind of do certain things, certain mental exercises to kind of help me through that anxiety. But I'll share, you know, like, as someone who's been doing this for 30 years, that feeling still exists. And so for anybody that's listening, you know, like, if you're a blue belt, purple belt, whatever, right? Like, and you're like, "Oh man, I'm so anxious about this competition." Like, yeah, that's normal. You should be. Yeah. A little bit of that anxiety is healthy, right? It lets you know you're alive. It lets you know that you're doing something cool. You know, like, I'll tell you also, dude, like, when I became an instructor, when I became a black belt instructor, and it became more part of what I do on a day-to-day basis, I get anxiety watching my students roll. You know, I don't want to see anybody get injured. I want to see them do their best, you know? And so, you know, watching when I teach my classes, and my classes get big sometimes, I have this sense of freaking anxiety that, like, oh God, nobody run into each other. We're working on takedowns and there's 50 people on the mat. Like, nobody get hurt today, you know? Like,
So I think back to your point. So I had listed there are two, for me, there's two types of anxiety. There's like the good anxiety and there's the bad anxiety. Yeah. And like the good anxiety is like, it makes you feel alive and it's part of the experience, right? That if competing was easy, it wouldn't be fun. If competing was a walk in the park, it wouldn't be worth anything. The reason why it's valuable is because it makes you uncomfortable. Exactly. It makes you uncomfortable, right?
Yeah.
And you know, that's part of the fun of it. You know, I just wanted to share a story with you that like, I used to get so worked up. There's one time where, we were in our old apartment, this like tiny 600 square foot apartment in Berkeley. And, I'm in the bathroom and I didn't even, it was the day of the week of a tournament. Actually, it wasn't even the day of, it was like, you know, in the middle of the week and the tournament was on Saturday or whatever. And I'm like practicing my wrestling stance in the bathroom, like changing levels and like moving around, and the door is closed and I don't even realize how much time has gone. I'm just like looking at myself in the mirror, you know? And Becca's like, what the hell is going on in there? Like, she just hears me like breathing, jumping.
She's like grunting. Yeah,
like changing levels, telling myself to change levels, like, you know, like all this stuff. And she's just like, and ever since then, she still gives me shit about like the week of a tournament. She's like, am I going to have to remind you not to wrestle yourself in the mirror in the bathroom? So like I did.
I mean, it's real,
you know what I mean? And that's the fun of it. And I think then there's bad anxiety, and that's where you feel trapped and stuck. That's the kind of anxiety that ruins the experience. And if the anxiety is so bad that the experience itself isn't pleasurable, right? Then like that's no good. And like some things are worthy of having anxiety over, and they deserve to be listened to, right? So like if we're talking about like, oh, there's somebody in class that's sketchy, you know, like you should listen to your anxiety about them and you should not train with them. Like that's totally cool. Or, hey, here's a technique. Sometimes I will say sometimes certain techniques give you anxiety and it's important to listen to them, to that anxiety, but it's also sometimes important to move through it. Right. So like things that might feel particularly dangerous, heel hooks, or, you know, rolling back takes, which we do not practice at the Gorilla Den because nobody has signed a waiver.
No.
But like things like that where you're like, and then sometimes you can address it. You could say, hey, I have anxiety about this move. I'm afraid I'm going to get hurt if I do it. Can you show me how to do this safely? And you understand it and you can work through it, right? Sometimes the anxiety is important because it allows you to respect the severity of what is happening in that moment, you know?
Absolutely.
But I don't know. So those are my kind of like my pillars, you know?
I think that's great. I mean, you know, going back to your point about competition, you know, the fact that it's that good anxiety, right? Like I think back to the best movies I watch, the best stories I've heard, and they all have stakes, right? Like without stakes, who cares, right? Like if nothing's at risk here, the story kind of falls flat.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what I enjoy about competing. And so it's that good anxiety. I'll tell you some of the best advice I ever heard. I'm not sure if I shared it here before, but some of the best advice I've ever heard was don't let the pressure outweigh the pleasure. Don't let the pressure outweigh the pleasure. And it rings so true about competing in a one-on-one sport, you know, like where you're just, it's you and some other person, and it can be a lot of pressure, but it's supposed to be fun. You know, we're doing this for fun. So, you know, that's kind of my thought when I compete nowadays.
Yeah. I like that a lot. You know, in cycling, we have these, like you have, types, they're called, it's a scale of fun, type one, type two, type three, type four, you may have heard, but like, type one fun is fun while you're doing it. Type two fun is it's a little uncomfortable, but it's also fun. Type three is that was not very much fun, but it felt good to do it. And type four fun is that was absolutely no fun at all. But at least I got a story. And, you know, sometimes jiu-jitsu tournaments sit in the like type three fun where it's like, oh, that was not quite fun at the time. But afterwards, I'm really glad that I did it.
Yeah,
for sure. And I think that like, yeah, I like that. I like don't let the pressure ruin the pleasure. Question for you, like what? Oh, go ahead. I was just gonna ask you what advice do you give your students around anxiety when they have a competition or maybe a tough class or a belt promotion coming up?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, when I think about tournaments, typically what I tell them is exactly what I just shared with you. Don't let the pressure of the moment outweigh the pleasure of what you're doing. Right? Like to me that is some of the best advice I've heard about competing. I'll also remind them that, you know, everything that they've done to this point has prepared them for this moment. Right. And like there are different levels of this, right? Like if I'm getting someone ready for an in-house tournament, it's a lot different than me getting ready for someone for an IBJJF like LA Open or like, you know, Worlds or something, Pan Ams, right? Like it's a lot different, right? Like in-house, it's like, hey, there is no pressure. There's no pressure here. You're coming in and you're basically rolling with your teammates and I'm your referee. Yeah. Like who cares, right? Like for those bigger moments, it's like, man, this is everything you've wanted. You're about to get a hold of, right? Like enjoy this. Take soak this in and enjoy it, right? Like this is your chance to showcase everything you've been doing and make a name for yourself in some cases.
I like that. I was gonna say that so earlier this week a good friend of mine reached out to me with a job related question. He was kind of asking me how I manage stress and anxiety around my job, and I've gotten so much better at this since I've had kids, so much better. I do one of two things. One, if I'm overwhelmed or like super busy, I just communicate. I just tell people, hey, I've got too much on my plate. I don't think we're going to be able to get this done in time. I don't understand how to do this. And like 99 times out of 100, people will actually respect your professionalism at coming to them and articulating exactly what the problem is. Because what happens is when you're able to articulate what the problem is, that means you've gone through and done the work to figure out exactly what it is. You know, take a minute, pause, and do an analysis. Because there's a moment where you're overwhelmed. And I'm bringing this up because it's relevant to jiu-jitsu. If you're heading into a tournament, and you're feeling that anxiety is you're overwhelmed. You're overwhelmed because you don't know exactly what thing to focus on. There's so many things they're so stressful that are whatever, you know, it's this, the thread begins to unravel and you lose the whole sweater. And so when you can sit there and just run piece by piece, okay, am I nervous about if my gi is going to fit right? Am I nervous about if I'm going to make weight? Am I nervous about if I should pull guard or if I should, you know, have a takedown? Really run through every scenario and you'll discover that when you're able to name those things, like when you're actually able to think about the specific pieces of the whole thing, it completely loses its power over you. And so for me, like when I, with my friend, I was like, yeah, like with work, I'll like run through every piece of the project. Like, what is it about this project that's so overwhelming? And once you're able to, the very exercise of articulating what it is about the assignment that is stressful, daunting, etc. The very exercise of articulating it actually gives you power over it in some ways. And so that's how I feel about. Yeah,
I think too. Sorry, no, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
I was deep in it.
I was going to say, I think kind of going back to your point of work, right? It's like, it's also not that you say it. It's how you say it, right? Like how you say it to yourself, how you say it to others, right? And I think you do a really good job of articulating exactly and showing your work, right? Like showing like, this is why I can't do X, Y, and Z, right? And then that thought process, and this again kind of bleeds into jiu-jitsu. This thought process is why I'm anxious about this. Okay, well, how do I break this down and solve it, right? Like
with me with competing, it's, I tell people to do this all the time with competition. If you can run the first, you know, the first 15 seconds of the match, if you could just run that over and over and over again in your head, you're going to own those first 15 seconds, right? Like you drill it, get into the gym, do whatever you're going to do. If you're a guard puller, like, you know, pull guard, get your first sweep, pass, just do it over and over and over again, because that will take, because part of the anxiety is the uncertainty. And once you know what you're going to do, then that you can't control anything about what anybody else is going to do. And so you should just move forward with your plan.
What's funny to me was
a big point in this last year with competing, when you decided I was no longer going to pull guard. And it was a hard thing for me, because the way that I prepare for matches is I drill in my head and physically the first I do that. I just over and over and over again. I visualize that to get to those first 2 points, right? Usually first 2 points wins. And so whoever scores the first 2 points wins statistically. And so I was just, okay, we're going to do takedowns. And it's like, what that means, Blake, is that you really have to commit. You can't sit here and drill in your head that you're going to pull guard, but tell your friend Uday that you're going to do a takedown. Like you have to actually drill that takedown in your head the way that you would your typical guard pull, because this is going to soothe. This is what you need to soothe your anxiety. And so
I remember after class, you'd be like, hey, Uday, can we do some takedowns? And I'm like, fuck, all right, let's go.
No, I mean, that's how I conquer it. Conquer the bitch is that I have to do it. And so that was an interesting part about that, was because it was like, okay, I really have to commit to this months before, you know? Anyways,
that's great, man. I'll tell you too, you know, one kind of going back to the idea of good anxiety, you know, one of the things I get anxious about is presenting. And I like to think of myself as a pretty good presenter, and similar to competition, right? Despite the fact that I've been doing this for years and years and years, I still get anxious. Right. And so when I film those tutorials, when I do a seminar, it's like, all right, how do I want to position this? How do I want to say this? How do I want to articulate this? What moves do I want to show? And so what that leads me to do is hyper prepare. And you and I have talked about that. You've actually helped me in that preparation for some of these seminars I've done, right? Like I've had you come over and like, hey, Blake, I just want to run through something really quickly. Let me just play with this. And is that good anxiety that's caused me to be hyper-focused and hyper-prepared. I think you even made a joke. It's like, man, I've been to seminars with like black belts that have like 18 stripes on their belt, and they just come in and say, hey, what do you want to learn? And then they just kind of wing it. And I'm like, I can't. I got to be really dialed in and focused. And I think when I do that, the students who I do that for, they see it and they appreciate that there's a structure to this, right? And so that anxiety has caused me to really hyper-focus on what structure do I want to articulate, and how do I mean, the fact that we have an outline for this very program, right, is because like, if you look at our notes, I have like word vomit, and like, you're like, I got this. I don't need to, right? Because you fly better that way, and I fly better having a path, right? And so my anxiety causes me to do that. So
Remembering that, but I will say, if anybody has the pleasure of taking a class with you, it is wall to wall jiu-jitsu. There is not a wasted moment in one of your classes. And that is honestly, like, that's a class above when it comes to taking a jiu-jitsu class. Like,
thanks,
there's
man.
A lot of people who rest on the laurels of ceremony and routine and ritual, where it's like, okay, guys, like, okay, the blue belt's here to warm you guys up. I'm going to have my coffee. And when you're done with that, then I'll come in, I'll teach you my 5 minutes of technique, and then I'll bow out at the end of class. Yeah. You know, you literally, from the moment people step on the mat to the last minute of the roll, you are pushing the pace and providing people with jujitsu instruction. And I think that is, again, that is a class above. Like, that's, you know, my buddy, you'd actually appreciate this, and we're getting in the weeds, but my buddy Hector Beltran, you know Hector.
Really good dude. Awesome jiu-jitsu.
Awesome jiu-jitsu. Hector runs Academy Jiu-Jitsu in Downey?
I think it's South Bay, right?
He has two places, and he's vehement about no bullshit warm-ups. And he's like, well, here's why I don't do bullshit warm-ups. He goes, because I got Bob, who is, you know, Bob the blue belt, who has a kid and can train jiu-jitsu 3 times a week and has a job. Yeah. And so Bob, let's make this easy math. Bob can train 4 times a week. And if I do bullshit warm-ups with Bob and stretches, that means that over a week, that is an hour of Bob's time that I've fucking wasted so that I can look at my phone over the course of, so that's a whole class. So I've taken a whole class away from Bob that this is Bob's only time to do jiu-jitsu. This is his only chance to get better. And then over the course of a month, that's 4 fucking classes that I've taken from him. You know, over the course of a year, like, think about how many classes I've taken away from Bob, how much better he could be because I didn't want to program or plan for that 15 minutes of class.
Yeah.
And think about how many Bobs are in your class. You know what I mean? Like, and so he breaks it down like that. And I'm like, man, that is so true. And so he is just, same deal, man. Like wall to wall jiu-jitsu. And I say this like because like everybody does warm-ups, but like the way you warm students up, you give practical warm-ups that inform what you're doing.
It's
that
all
day,
familiar movements,
right? Yeah. Even exactly. When you're doing running around the mat, doing shuffles, you're checking people's head position. You're, you know what I mean? Things like that. That's like, I'm gonna make you better today. So, anyways. Bit down the rabbit hole.
I appreciate you saying that, and I appreciate you recognizing, man. Yeah. Thank you.
All right, man. What gives you anxiety as a parent? you said it on this one in our notes, God. And I had to just say the same thing. You know, just so you guys know, the first bullet point in the notes is from Uday is LOL everything. And my first bullet point is everything.
it's everything. You know, like, look. Am I doing this right? Right? Like that's the real genesis of it all, right? Like, am I doing this right? The reality is, am I learning from the same mistakes that my parents may have made with me? Right? Am I learning from those mistakes? Not to say that my parents are bad parents, but like, you know, they are not perfect humans. No one is a perfect human, right? Like they made mistakes. Am I learning from those mistakes? Right? Just like we talk about jiu-jitsu. It's great to make mistakes, learn from them. In real life, at work, everywhere, it's great to make mistakes, learn from them. Am I learning from those mistakes? You know, am I letting go at the right time? Am I letting go too early? Am I letting go too late? You know, so that they can make their own mistakes. You know, am I leaning in too much? Am I not doing enough? You know, like, am I raising my daughters to be strong, thoughtful, intelligent, independent women? And so that they can conquer their own journey on their own, right? Like that's what gives me anxiety as a father, right? And then like, you know, as the parent of two daughters, man, you know, like at one point they're gonna date, right? Like, and at one point, you know, it's always kind of in the back of my head that like, do I have to worry? I do worry that one day, you know, someone will attack them, you know, like sexually attack them, right? Like, and that's one of the reasons why it's so important for me that they learn how to protect themselves, right? Like that they learn some way of just physically being able to protect themselves and You know, so these are the things that keep me up at night as a father. I don't know. It's LOL everything, bro. Am I being too hard on my, you know, last week we talked about Milena's report card. Am I being too hard on her? Am I not being hard enough? You know, like, where's the fine line, right? So it's all of it, dude, you know?
And I think, it's so interesting because I think that if you didn't have anxiety, you wouldn't be trying. Like, you wouldn't be good.
That's a great,
I kind of hate that, that's but like the fact that you were stressed out about it, the fact that you're asking the questions, right? The fact that my friend is stressed out about his job, about how he's performing there and his workload, that means he cares. He's showing up. And as you know, it's maybe a little cliche, but it's very true. And so, everything that you mentioned that you were stressed out about is a sort of testament to your ambition as a parent.
I was just going to say
that, like, you know, I get anxious about the big things. Like, am I raising good men, you know? I don't know. Like, the thing that always gets me stuff like, you know, am I teaching them how to process their anger appropriately or their sadness appropriately? Like, these kind of like big things that are like, dude, you're not going to know for 30 years, you know, like, and it's hard to, they're weird things to stress out about, and they're not going to be taught in one conversation in the kitchen, you know, or like one thing over, like, you know, over some waffles. Like, they're these bigger things that are harder to understand. And that's part of maybe the reason why I focus on those things is because they just allow me to stress out about them more. Cause like, those are things that you can't get a hard answer to. I think the biggest anxiety for parents, and I think it's hard in a kind of a reality of our time, just genuinely come down to financial stress. Because if we had enough money, and
it's all, you know,
and I hate that. Because, you know, you don't need money to be happy, but it doesn't hurt. And like, I hate that. And I think that a lot of people who listen to this can appreciate that. Like, the difference between the level of stress in our household when there's financial stability versus when there's financial instability, like, shit like that, where it's like, you know, and there's some things where you're like, oh, cool. Like, you know, should we sign the kid up for another fucking thing of soccer at this place, another thing of soccer at this place? Yeah. Well, dude, the fact that you're even thinking about that you can afford both of those things is a good problem in and of itself, you know? I just have to be mindful of that. Like, a lot of the things that we stress out about are quite literally privileges that other parents don't even have. Really lucky for that.
Totally, dude. You know, one of the hardest things of this unemployment period I'm going through right now is having to tighten the belt, you know, and like having to just be a little more intentional about what and where I'm spending money on, you know? And so, and it breaks my heart that I have to limit what experiences they can have because of that, right? Like, fuck, I'd love to take them on a trip somewhere, you know, around the world over the summer. It's not feasible. Okay. It'd be grossly irresponsible for me to do that right now, right? Like, spring break is around the corner. And I'm like, you know, Van is like, hey, maybe we should go check out Cubs spring training in Arizona. And I'm like, I want to. And it might get expensive, you know, and I don't know if that's the responsible thing to do. So, you know, like, it breaks my heart that I have to rob them of these experiences because I'm still job hunting, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. One thing that I have actually benefited from watching so much reality television is last season of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, or just the Kardashians now, Kim took north, I think, to this. I think she took north to London to see a soccer game, and North's entire class, like 30 kids, to stay in a really nice hotel. I mean, they're billionaires, dude. And I think those kids got about as much out of that experience as they would have gotten out of going to a local football game. You know, like they like that team the same way that you would like a local football team. They had snacks. They got to talk to a player. But like the actual experience that those kids got was like not all that, like the stoke, you know, like how stoked those kids were.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some things where you're like, yeah, I mean, whatever, you know, like it's fucking awesome. They get to take private jets places. But the other end, you're like, yeah, but like what the kid is really getting out of it is not that much different than like something that is like the same experience, but scaled down varying degrees. You know, I think it's an 80-20 rule. Yeah. And I think that the kids get 80% of that experience with like 20% of the expense.
Yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
But it is, but it's still frustrating when you're like, no, we shouldn't go out for sushi again this week. Like, no, like that's, that's a stupid expense.
Yeah. Let me ask you something. Who gets more anxious about parenting between the two of you guys?
I get more anxious about the big things, and Becca gets more anxious about the little things.
Yeah.
So I get more stressed out about, like I said, raising good men. I get more stressed out about finances. Becca's very good at managing finances. And Becca gets way more stressed out about like which birthday party we're going to say yes to. Should we buy more 5T shirts or should we size up? Like things like that, where it's like, babe, like, I don't know, like let's size up a shirt. Kids are going to grow, you know, like we don't need to stress out about that. Like we've got enough stuff to stress out about. And for her, the minutia, I think a lot makes things more manageable, being stressed out about the little things. So she doesn't stress out about the big things. And for me, the little things are too much to stress out about because I like to stress out about the big things. And so we're like balance.
I'm going to rephrase that for you so you don't get in trouble with Becca.
Go.
It's not the little things, dude. It's not the little things. All that shit matters. It's the day-to-day stuff.
Day-to-day.
It's the day-to-day,
day-to-day
stuff.
Better way to say it. And definitely.
Have I ever told you? So, so Van and I are kind of the same in that regard. And I will tell you, one of the things that we have done that has really, really helped. I don't know if I've told you this before, but every Sunday – every Sunday night, hell or high water, and this was Van's idea. I hate that we call it this because it's so cheesy, but we call it, Van and I have a family meeting. And every Sunday, we go, you know how I love my spreadsheets. We put the to-do list in a spreadsheet and we break it down between, hey, what's going on with the kids' activities this week? What's going on with PTA stuff this week? What's going on with trips coming up? What's going on with birthday parties coming up? What's going on with our social calendar this week? And we sit there for an hour on Sunday night before we go to bed and we chat through all of it and we put whatever we need to put on our calendar and we make sure that we're both on the same page on everything. And dude, we've been doing this for like a year now, maybe a year and a half, and it has solved so much of like so much of the arguments that come from like my own flightiness.
Yeah.
Like, oh fuck, that's today, huh? Oh, okay, yeah, we gotta go. And she'll be like, ooh, day. Right? Like, did you buy the birthday present for your nephew?
Yeah. Oh man.
Yes. You know,
I can't tell you how many times I've been driving to the birthday party.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Picking up a present on the way. Oh man.
Yeah. It's so helpful, dude. So you know, remember that? I don't know if you remember, but I sent you my to-do list template.
I remember your to-do list template. Back. I implemented it for like template. 3 or 4 weeks. It was awesome.
Good. I'm glad it helped for a few weeks, but it's that process on Sunday nights has, you know, we're talking about anxiety, has alleviated so much of her anxiety. And in turn has made me a better partner to her too, because I've been able to just react and proactively be able to kind of get in front of some of the stuff that's that day to day.
Man. Yeah. I mean, that was my first thought, actually. My first thought was more about like, wow, what a good marriage that you guys sit down and you have that level of like, first of all, that you give each other that attention to move your family forward every week. Like that's sick, dude. That's so cool.
Her idea.
And
her idea, totally.
And also, like, that's just got to be so helpful. Yeah. You know, we do super have – here's the deal. We have physical calendars. We have two of them in the house that have everything written down. And we both look at the calendars and we both talk about it a lot. So, like, that communication is there. We also have 1.5 kids right now, you know. We've got – an Owen who has activities, and we've got a baby Milo who is a, you know, just starting to walk. So he doesn't have a lot of stuff going on. As soon as his activity level goes up, this is just going to, you know, magnify exponentially. So I think that will be a must.
Yeah. Try it. Let me know if you guys like it. It's been super helpful for us, but let me know if you guys try it.
I want to ask you, can you remember a time that you had a ton of anxiety about something that ended up being all for nothing with parenting? Because I can think of a situation. I can think of plenty of situations that we've had. But like a time with parenting where you were like, oh man, I'm so stressed out about that. And then it actually, the stress was just not worth the, you know, the sizzle wasn't worth the steak.
Man, there's one that I can recall that is a longer story, so I'll save that for a future episode. But let's see. So Shia used to injure herself all the time. And like for the first year of her life, we've been to the ER. In her first year of life, we were in the ER, maybe the first year and a half, like 10 times probably. And those trips are expensive,
they
dude.
Are expensive.
She would walk into shit and like have us. And by the way, this is our second kid, so we should have known better, right? Like, she's fine. Rub some dirt on it. But no, because Milena has always been, when she was younger, she was a lot more graceful, but now she's a klutz, and it's kind of flipped, right? So Shia, when she was younger, was a bit of a klutz, and now she's more graceful. But she used to like walk into stuff all the time. And you know, I remember there was one time she like tripped in our backyard and hit her head, and her head landed on a pebble, and it caused like a little like cut in her head, and it was it looked like a deep cut, and we were freaking out, right to the ER. This is during the pandemic, you know? So like, I was like, let's go to ER. Here we go. And she was like crying and screaming. There's blood everywhere. It was nothing. Milena, when she was starting to eat solids, we were in a restaurant together, dude. Projectile vomit. This was Father's Day. I'll never forget it, dude. It was my first Father's Day. We were at a restaurant and she was eating something. Minutes later, projectile vomit. It's like, okay, all right, she's clean, she's fine, it's all good, never mind, it's all good now. An hour later, projectile vomit again. I'm starting to get a little nervous now. 20 minutes later, more projectile vomit. We got to get into the ER. Spent my first Father's Day in the ER with this kid, and I'm not complaining. I'd spend a week in the ER, like whatever, right? Like not complaining, but it turned out to be absolutely nothing. It's just, she shouldn't be, you know, I think she has an allergy to bananas and avocados, and these are the foods she shouldn't eat right now. Don't worry about it. But these are the things, right? Because like you don't know as a parent, as a new parent, is like, I don't know what to freak out about, right? And I remember like walking into the ER, I was like, it was like a scene out of that show 24. I was like, basically, I kicked in the door, like holding my baby in my hands, like, someone look at my baby. Yeah. She's puking everywhere. And I was like tears like coming out of my eyes, like freaking out.
Well, everything. Like literally everything. There's so many things. We used to It's funny because it's like, yeah, we same experience between our first and our second. Old Dr. Tinney at Kaiser in Oakland got so many emails from us and videos from us. Cause it was again, like we had our first during the pandemic, which was amazing, because I think he sheltered us from having to worry about what was going on in the world because we had this like awesome little project. But that being said, he was like always stressed out about. So like he had this thing that he did where it looked like he was developing a tic and he wasn't, he was just learning how to focus or something. And so we like took all these videos of him of trying to get this tick. We wanted to get it on tape. So we sent all these videos to Dr. Tinney, man. And she wrote in the email was, you know, my son was walking by when I was watching these videos, which is unprofessional, I know, but he just couldn't stop talking about how beautiful your kid is.
Oh, that's so sweet. And I was like,
what? She's like, by the way, the tick is fine. That's nothing. That he's just figuring out how to focus. And it was like one of those moments where I was like, oh shit, we're stressing out too much, man. Her first response was just, man, you have a beautiful baby. And we were like, oh no,
tell he's me got what's some wrong. Kind of
neurological, neurological issue. It's going to be, the rest of our lives are going to be spent taking care of him, to help him have a normal life. And it's just like, you have a beautiful baby.
I don't think this is going to change for the rest of our lives. Right? Like, I think, we're always going to worry about our kids, like we're always going to, worry like, how's school going when they're in college, right? Like how's their love life? Is everything okay? How's work, right? My dad just intuitively called me on Monday night and just intuitively, hey, just want to chat with you. And you could hear my voice, like, what's wrong? And I was like, nothing. He's like, no, what's wrong? And so I told him, and I was like, how the fuck did he know to call me?
Yeah, nice.
And then, but it was also like, hey, can you do this thing for me? I actually called because of this. Like, thought we had a sweet moment, Dad. He's like, actually, I'm calling because I need you to help buy a car. Can you help me get on? I was like, all right, there it is.
Oh, that's great. Man. That's hilarious. I was going to say something, but I lost it. I guess let's move on to our next section. We've been rambling here for a while. Yeah. Have you let the anxiety from one area spill over to the other?
Also known as have you paid twice? Which we've talked about. That remains some of the best advice I've ever heard. Yeah. Also, this is it's something that honestly, Blake, dude, it's something. This week, I've really had to think hard and long and hard about in my just day to day, right? Like, because, like I said, this week has been just very difficult for me. And so going into training and the idea of you're going to beat yourself up when you're sitting in front of your computer job hunting. Don't beat yourself up here. Let this place, let jiu-jitsu be your out, right? When I'm hanging out with my kids, and like I had a lot of time to hang out with them tonight. I canceled training today, or the training got canceled tonight. And so it was like, don't steal this moment from them. Give them your all. Don't pay twice, right? Like, you're going to pay later. You're going to sit in front of your computer and beat yourself up. Don't do that now. Enjoy these moments, because these moments are fleeting, right? Like, playing stupid, silly little games with them while they're eating dinner, right? Like, soon they're going to be like teenagers. They're going to be out the house. They're not going to want to eat their dinner with me, right? Like, soak this in. And so, yeah, I pay twice all the time. And I hate that about myself. And I'm trying to be better about it. And, I think it's natural as humans, because we have emotions, right? And these emotions linger and I'll share a funny story with you. So as I got closer to the end of this job process with the one that ultimately rejected me, it's between me and one other person. And as I was waiting for a decision, I was like, I had that final interview last Monday. And on Tuesday, I was like, oh, man, I haven't heard anything yet. I'm, you know, I was already freaking out. It was a day later. And Van's like, dude, just relax. Have an edible. You know, you don't have anything tomorrow morning. Just take it easy. And I was like, you know what? That's a good idea. And I did that. And one of the things I forgot that sometimes happens when I take edibles is, yeah, I calm down. I relax. But I also get hyper paranoid. And so what happened was I sat there on my edible. I was like, me and Van were watching something on TV, and I was going through, combing through every word in my head that I said in that interview and thinking, nope, you're an idiot. That's the last thing you want to say, you fool. You're a monster. How could you say that in an interview? What, you wore that suit? You idiot. Like, you sat like that. Like, oh, everything. It was the worst thing I could have done. And so, yeah, no, it was like, I paid twice. I could have had this really nice moment to enjoy just doing nothing with my wife. And I paid twice by just like overanalyzing and having the anxiety, you know? And so, yeah, man. So, you know, just like, and going back to grappling, right? Like, you know, you get very ornery when you're cutting weight, you know? And so like, you take it out on the people, just like we talked about last week, right? We take it out on the people we feel safest with, like our kids do to us. Right. And so I think the first step is recognizing that that's happening and then trying to be active about it. Right. I had to give Milena a little apology this week because, you know, the anxiety bled over, and I snapped at her at one point this week, you know, about something that was totally unwarranted and unfair. And I apologized to her and I made it up to her. So long answer short, to answer the question nice and clean away. Yeah. I pay twice and I try not to anymore.
Yeah. I think it's the challenge of being human, like the nature of being human is like having consciousness where all things happen all the time in your head. Right. And like, if we were like, that's what's so cool about watching. That's like, I think why we are drawn to nature and like the, how incredible animals are, is because they're like just present, you know, they're not thinking about you know, that stupid comment that somebody left on their Instagram, you know, like they're not like they're just in the moment all of the time. And it's something that I think is that humans long for, because consciousness is exhausting. Like, it's so hard having just everything happen all of the time in your head. And I think the same thing, right? Like, you make the decision to do whatever, right? So, you know, it's, I make the decision to go to jujitsu. I'm not going to spend the whole time at jujitsu class thinking about work and being stressed out about what I'm not getting done. Or more commonly these days, I have to make the decision not to go to jujitsu. And I need to sit there at the desk and say, like, jujitsu is my fucking life. It's my lifestyle. Missing today is not going to be the end of the world. I'm going to make it up. And this is, you know, I'm just going to be present for my job right now, because I need to be. And this is me actually being, in a way, this is me being confident and good at jujitsu. It's knowing that I don't have to go today to define, you know, who I am as a person who does this. You know,
it's a great perspective.
It's easier to say than it is to do. But I try to.
I get it.
All right, man. Dude, do we have a snack attack?
Oh, we have a snack attack, man. Now, I will say, I've thought about this a little bit, and I feel bad that our audience has to listen to me and you have to listen to me chew. And so it's like, you guys don't need to hear that, right? Like, so Van delivered it to me again, as my amazing wife does. And so I tried it ahead of the call, ahead of the meeting, ahead of the podcast, right? And so I'll share with you what she
brought. I love that we're experimenting with format on the snack attack. You know, we're always evolving.
Just, you got to evolve. Evolve or die, right? Yeah. Evolve or die. And I appreciate that no one is like giving me shit about it either. Like, no one's been like, Hey, Uday, we don't need to hear you crunching on fucking turtle chips, dude. Like, cut it out.
That is a beautiful and expensive jaw you have on your face, my man. So maybe it has some sort of amazing audio properties that we're not aware of.
Well, listen, so Van went to Trader Joe's and she bought me boozy macaroons. And I love macaroons. I know you don't partake in the devil's brew, as it were,
anymore,
my friend.
However, anymore,
right? But these are really good. I like macaroons, okay? And they come in three different flavors. Mm-hmm. They come in rum, French brandy, and I'm going to butcher this because it's a French name, but Cointreau. Mm-hmm. Cointreau. I don't know what that is.
It's an orange liqueur.
Okay, well, that makes sense that it's in an orange macaroon. These are good. These are good. I will also say it says that they need to be defrosted for 4 hours in the fridge. We did not do that. We put it outside. We left it on the counter for an hour, and they're perfectly great. So it's not as boozy as you would think, right? Like, I mean, it's a snack at a store. I don't even know if you like have to show your ID to mm-hmm. buy these. So like at Trader Joe's, right? But like it's not like overly boozy. So if you don't like that kind of like booze taste, you're not gonna get it overwhelmingly here. But you get a little bit of the kick, right? You taste a little bit of it, enough. And it's got that same kind of texture as a macaroon would. So like you lose nothing on the macaroon end. And you gain a little bit on the like, oh, I got a little kick, you know, like maybe surprise your guests, you know, like, hey, try this thing.
A little risky.
I don't know. A little risque, you know, like, hey, have this on a, what is it? Today's a Wednesday. Have this on a Wednesday afternoon and a Wednesday night.
Instead of having
it's good.
An existential crisis inducing edible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, what?
Oh, God. I never want to go back to that place again.
I've been there. It's horrible.
So
scale
dark.
From 1 to 10, how would you rate it?
Yeah, great question. I haven't tried the Cointreau one yet. I will say which one do I have? I had the rum and the French brandy. I will say the French brandy one was a little bit disappointing. It wasn't in the fact that I didn't. It was almost too subtle. The booze taste, the flavor of the macaroon, magnificent. The rum one, you had a little bit more to it. So to answer your question on scale 1 to 10, it's not fair because I really like macaroons. I'm going to give it like an 8.6.
Ooh, that's high.
An 8.6.
It's high.
Yeah, it's high.
All right, man.
So if you like booze and you like macaroons, this is a snack for you guys.
Oh man, that's great.
What about you? You got a snack? Got a snack for the
I did not bring a snack tonight. I am still just drinking my buried alive liquid death or buried alive liquid death. And no, dude, we haven't been. I don't, my stomach is a mess right now, so I'm not even thinking about eating anything. I've been eating
you know what, dude? the next time we film one of these, I'm going to try and make a note to remember to Instacart something to your house. And I'm just going to have it sent to you. I'm going to look at like Ralph's. I'm going to find like some random ass snack. And I like send this to Blake.
You know, I'm due for a snack attack. You've been carrying the load there for a while.
No, I don't mind. Yeah. I don't mind. But I want you to experience what I experienced when Van surprises me a snack. So I'm going to try and remember to do this for you, my man.
That said, let's pay some bills and talk about our awesome sponsor.
Let's do that.
Fluid Tactical electrolyte drink mix. If you guys train jiu-jitsu, which you probably do if you're listening to this podcast, if you guys and gals train jiu-jitsu, or if you're just a physically active person, or if you're just a person who values your hydration, you know, you might know that replenishing your electrolytes is a critical part of proper hydration. You can't just drink water these days. There's more to it than that. And Fluid Tactical Electrolyte Mix provides rapid hydration. It helps you hydrate better than anything else. It replaces minerals that are lost in sweat without excess sugar or added junk. It is a must have for firefighters, construction workers, solar farmers, oil field workers, or anyone who is working in hard conditions in heat and stress.
Guys, this stuff helps eliminate cramps as well. It was designed by professionals from real science. Tactical is a no-nonsense way of preventing cramps and fighting dehydration during long, hot days on the job, training sessions. And this stuff mixes really easily in water. Simply add one packet to any 16-ounce water bottle, shake it up until it dissolves, and you're good to go.
Makes it super easy to take around with you everywhere because they're just in these tiny little packets that you can carry with you. It's made in the USA. Their ingredients are all sourced and inspected for purity. Their mixing and packaging takes place in a GMP-inspected and improved facility in Los Angeles, California. And they come in 5 fruity flavors, so just choose your favorite. Or you can get a variety pack, which is what we usually do here in the house. You can get Fluid at livefluid.com or just search for Fluid Tactical Electrolyte Mix on Amazon.
Link in the bio.
Link in bio. Pop culture. This is going to be fun because your pop culture thing is the same as my pop culture thing this week. I saw that you put yours there, and I remember that I watched this, and I was like, we got to talk about it. So let's go. So what did you want to talk about?
All right. So I've got two. So I think I know which one you talked about, which one you got. I'm going to guess actually. So the first one is, there's a movie, I think it came out a couple of years ago. Maybe it didn't. It's about the BlackBerry phone, and it is wild. It is so. It's like it's a fun, silly movie, and it stars the guy from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Glenn Howerton, and he plays someone that's like maybe 20 years older than him, and he kills the role. Like everyone in that movie just kills their role, and it's like just a fun look at like Silicon Valley startups, tech startups, and like what goes into them, right? Like how they're run and just like it injects a little bit of humor into it. And I don't know if it was intentional humor all the time, but like it's a fun light movie about like some like serious shit that happened, right?
Yes.
Is this the one you saw?
I haven't seen I haven't seen your other one, but I read the book.
Yeah.
I read the book about the other one that you watched.
Oh, yeah. Really?
It was a really big book in like 2018 Silicon Valley culture when like everything was going. Maybe 2018, 2019. The BlackBerry movie. It's really entertaining and it's also fucking fascinating. Like it's so interesting. Like how the technology evolved. It's so interesting how. So like I worked for a company called Tile. Tile makes Bluetooth trackers. And Tile was in what we call a vertical defining company. So that is they bring a product to market that creates a whole category of products. When Tile came to market, there were no other Bluetooth trackers.
No one else doing it.
And then there were copycat brands that tried to do them to the point where for a few years, whenever you saw a Bluetooth tracker on keys made by anyone, you called it a Tile, right? Yeah. Same thing with TRX, right? The TRX straps. People, that was a vertical defining, like suspension trainers, TRX created that category of thing. Anyways, in tech, you have a small window with your vertical defining product before a massive company figures out how to do it better, faster, and more efficiently and take you out of business. And like with BlackBerry, their story is that like they're just running out of runway. They are these scrappy dudes because you don't expect it, right? Like because the BlackBerry was just such a staple, especially guys who were our age, right? Like it was such a staple. Becca's last phone before her iPhone was a BlackBerry. She was that person had that transition, that hard transition. And it was like, it was just like the Rolling Stones came and everyone threw their Beatles records out the window or something. Like it was like, it was like a cultural shifting moment.
God damn it, you're a poet. Again, like.
But yeah, it was, so the movie is really interesting because you're like, holy shit, like BlackBerry literally had like 100% market share on smartphones. Like that's insane. Like they had like, that's crazy. And then they currently have whatever the statistics that we're running across the
zero.
Screen. They have a 0%. And it's just like, oh my God. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's on Hulu. If you guys want to stream it, it's wild. It was such a fun movie. So yeah, I recommend it. You recommend
definitely
it?
Recommend it. It's a good, fun, easy watch.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other one that you alluded to is the TV show, about Theranos, the startup from Elizabeth Holmes, and it's a TV show also on Hulu. I think it's a couple years old at this point, and it's starring Amanda Seyfried, the woman that was in Mean Girls. Man, she's so good in this role. She's so good in it, dude. You haven't seen it, huh?
Yeah. But you read the book. I've seen it and read the book. Yeah. I just remember that I watched
she's
it.
She's so there good
was also
in it,
there was also a podcast about it. Like I consumed a lot of I consumed a lot of Elizabeth Holmes content because it is fascinating. It is such a wild story. If you're not familiar, Theranos was a company that promised to do basically rapid blood testing with the smallest sort of prick of blood, right? So currently the process of getting any kind of blood work done, right? You have to take a lot of blood. You know, sit down, have somebody stick a needle in your vein. It's a very brutal experience getting blood work done, right? And there has to be a more efficient way. So this woman started this company that promised to do this, to make it way more efficient, easier, less painful, et cetera, life-saving, and just completely lied. Just no other way to put it. Just lied about what the company was capable of doing or how it did it all. I mean,
to everyone.
And frauded investors. Like every interview they had. And now, I mean, this is no spoiler because Elizabeth Holmes is in federal prison. Whatever the comfy jail is for nonviolent criminals. But yeah, I mean, she went to jail.
She's doing time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I haven't finished it yet. Sorry, Uday. I just spoiled it for you.
So, I know that she was found guilty. I assume she went to prison.
So she also, I don't know if you knew this, but she got pregnant while she was on trial. Yeah. Yeah.
What? Don't tell me anymore.
This won't be revealed in the show. This is all recent stuff that I know about her because I was fascinated by her story. What's amazing about her is she is the embodiment of like Silicon Valley hubris to where I think she pled not guilty. I think she truly believed that she didn't do anything wrong. She like truly believed that these were all necessary evils in a path to a greater good. Yeah. Wow. Like she genuinely doesn't seem like she was trying to lie to people. I think she thought that what she was doing was the right thing to do.
Interesting. She is an interesting. I mean, everything is from like, I saw something where like she changes her voice when she does like interviews. Like she dives into like a deeper voice when she's on interviews. It's just weird and fascinating. I think I'm going to go down the rabbit hole after I finish the show. I think I might pick up the book, find this podcast you're referring to. And it's super interesting.
She changed her persona during her trial. She dropped the deep voice and she really tried to embrace her. I think she already has. I think she was pregnant with her second child. But she had both of them since she had been arrested for, or since they'd pressed charges against her for this this wow. thing. And so a lot of people thought that it was her strategy to get off.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh my which is gosh.
Really dark on a podcast about parents.
Yeah. Jeez.
Anyways, dude, we're getting lost in the sauce. Let's talk about takeaways.
You know, you go. What do you got? You go first.
You know, I think, you know, my big takeaway is what I liked about what we talked about this week is that there's good anxiety and there's bad anxiety.
Yeah.
And that the reason why anxiety exists is because there are stakes. And the reason why we have anxiety often is because we are invested in the outcome of our children and of our work. And often it is a symptom of the fact that we are doing our best and we are showing up and trying to do a good job. And we cannot let the pressure take away our pleasure. And that's kind of how I feel like where I feel like we've come from this.
I like that a lot. I don't think I could have said it any better. And I'll also add one thing, because it's words of wisdom from you, my man, is the idea of never paying twice.
Love
you know,
it.
That Love such it. Great advice that you've given me that I will take with me through all my days moving forward, you know, because it's so easy to let that anxiety force you to try pay twice, right? Like miss out on moments.
Yeah.
You get anxious about not working. Oh, I'm going to miss out on those moments of just hanging out with my kids and just playing Uno with them, being happy, right? Like, you know, I could sit in the garage on a Friday night job hunting, you know, or I could play Connect Four with my daughters, right? Like, am I going to let the anxiety win? Am I going to pay twice? Am I going to hang out with my kids, right? So I think that's such a great takeaway and a great piece of advice that you've bestowed upon me, my friend.
Well, I was just passing it on, man. Somebody gave it to me once. So, all right. What do you guys think? How do you manage your anxiety as parents, as jujiteros? You know, do you unplug or does it ruin your weekends? Let us know what you think. Shoot us an email at grapplingwithfatherhoodpod@gmail.com or send us a message. What's hilarious today is I think the plane going over your house was just going over my house.
You can hear it.
I can hear it because it was just going over my house. I heard it seconds later I heard it going over your house.
My house. That's so funny.
What's up? We're in Burbank.
Yeah, what's up?
Adjacent to the Burbank Airport.
Oh my gosh.
Anyways, and if you have any other questions, concerns, anything like that, also we friggin' almost an hour and a half into this, and we have yet to drop the best BJJ Fanatics instructional on the market.
Let's
on
go.
The website. Advanced Fundamentals, Uday Malhotra.
Elite No-Gi Fundamentals by yours truly. And guys, there is a March Madness sale on right now. Type in the code MARCHMAD2024 to get 47% off of the video of the instructional. So have at it, guys.
All right. Until next time, protect your neck.
Peace.